There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex, and we're here with another bonus episode for you with an amazing creator. I'm very excited to talk to him about his new book, Destination Kill, which is coming out May 13th from Oni Press. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Palmer. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for hopping on. Very excited to talk about this book. Now, there's a lot going on here. Obviously, this issue isn't coming out for a while. I don't know how much you want to talk about. I'll just sort of lay this out in case I forget later. But final letter order cutoff for it is April 20th. The book itself, as I mentioned, is coming out May 13th in stores. So we got a little time there. But this is actually, before we get into the plot, why don't we talk about the fact that, like, this is your solo debut. Like, you've done art for a couple of different projects, usually, at least as far as I've seen, working with Rory McConville and some other people as well. But why was this the right project to break out on your own?
I mean, I've always wanted to do my own stuff. I got into a thing of really, I was really just focused on making a living. I mean, that's really the honest truth. Did that for years, and that was my initial goal in getting into comics as well, was just to make a living. And obviously, once I'd sort of achieved that goal, it was I cruised on it for a little bit, to be honest, and kind of forgot about my own stuff. So but it did rear its head again because I started having ideas, and this particular project was gestating for a really long time. You know, I'm talking like 8 years, like lots and lots of ideas that I was having eventually sort of culminated into this idea. But, you know, I really enjoyed parts of collaboration, and I still would be open to collaborating in the future. It's just, life's really short. I really wanted to just try and get one idea out, and just give it a go. I mean, I've just always really liked like auteur creators, and you know, you've only got to look around. I mean, look at, like, for example, what Daniel Warren Johnson has done with his work is so inspiring. Frank Miller, or you know, whoever. It's just I think if you're an artist, it can be you can just get trapped in that mill of just working for other people, you know. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's just, if you've got things to say, then, or you think you've got something to say beyond just drawing pages, it's, that's how it began anyway. Yeah, that was a long, rambling answer, wasn't it?
No. I mean, that's exactly what I wanted to know, and I do want to ask more about it. But just to kind of lay out a little bit about the book for people so they have some context here.
Yes.
So this is a I've had a chance to read the first issue, which I loved. I thought it was great, very fun. There's a lot of fun in it. There's also a lot of big sci-fi ideas going on. It definitely feels... It's interesting to hear you talk about it being around for 8 years or gestating for 8 years, because it definitely feels very present with what we're going through right now. But okay. To give the broad strokes, London 2125, we're focusing on a member of the police force, Gina Serene, who is stuck in the middle of a bunch of different factions that are fighting over the city. You have an overwhelming, overarching corporation that controls everything. You got robot workers. You've got a resistance going on. So all of these ideas are bumped in there. It's very satirical and very funny at the same time. I just want to throw that out there. But now that I've kind of laid in the context, let's take another step back again. What was different for you in terms of crafting something when you're doing basically everything? You're doing the writing, you're doing the art, you're doing the lettering as well, which is also sometimes part of the art. So how did that change the process for you?
I mean, it's such a layered question, because everything was different, really. I was so used to just receiving a script, typically from Rory and Declan Shelby. I know you've had Deck on the podcast mm-hmm. before, so. But yeah, I mean, it's such a different experience, like having to completely come up with this stuff on your own. And it was honestly, it was really difficult to begin with. If you ever speak to Rory, he will let you know that I sent him drafts like early on to basically to get some pointers on it. It took a long time, specifically the writing. I mean, once the writing was over, the drawing is relatively simple by comparison. It's not easy ever, for me at least. It takes a long time, but it's simple at least. Whereas the writing was the real challenge. What was the initial question? I feel like I've lost the thread.
No. I mean, you're definitely following up on it. And basically I was asking about like taking all of those elements and putting them
yes.
in place. And something that we talk about often with writer artists who are doing all of it on the project is I'm always curious to hear about like, it sounds like you set down the script and then approached it as an artist. But once you're coming in as an artist, since you did craft the script, did you feel free to make changes? Did you go back and forth? Were you mad at yourself, your writer self of the past? How did that work?
I mean, the script itself, I mean, I would never do this again, having had this experience, but I didn't write a full script. So I was very much working from a plot and then adding some dialogue I had in my head already, but I didn't necessarily write it down. But I just, as I was going along, it was a very organic process of like, it came together bit by bit,
yeah.
You know, the structure wise, I had the whole thing, but it was very much a sort of making it up.
Was there a point when you were in the art where you're like, this fucking writer didn't finish his script? God damn it.
I mean, lots of times. And that's why I say, like, I probably would never do that again. Because it's so much easier if you plan each stage as much as you can, at least for me, you know, it's much simpler for my brain to not have to work those things out on the fly. And also you don't sort of write yourself into corners. Like, yeah, you don't plot something and then be like, actually, I have to like literally not redraw necessarily, but like re-thumbnail 5 pages mm-hmm. to figure out that problem. It's writing full script is easier for sure in terms of like doing it all for yourself. But it's a lot of hard work. Scripting, it does not come naturally to me at all. So I'm working on something now and I've scripted the whole thing and it's so much simpler that way. But yeah, I can't remember if that answered the question, but
no, I mean, the third part of it is the lettering, because like yes. I said earlier,
Coming up with the dialogue as I was going, the lettering, because it was such a at an early stage of the drawing, you know, in the layout stage, essentially, that's where I figured out all the lettering. I really had to finalize what people were saying at that point, just from a practical point of view. It's just like, well, I'm going to be drawing this lettering because it's all hand done. It's all hand lettered. So I kind of forced myself into doing that because I had to make the decisions. I had to stick with my own decisions, you know. Because once it's down on the page, it's so annoying to change. It's like I was kind of forcing myself to stick with stuff, you know.
How do you – this is a little different than the lettering, but there's points where you do put lettering or sound effects and they're integrated into the art. And I will just say, as a reader who has no artistic talent, whenever I see that in a book, it's like, ooh, it's like a little treat. It's fun to see. So
that's nice to hear.
No, I love it. I mean, it feels like just such a nice surprise when it's really integrated into the art itself. So how do you decide when you're going to do that as an artist, and how do you make sure you're not overdoing that particular tact?
I don't know how successful I am in that regard, really. It's not for me to say, I guess. But in terms of when to place that stuff, it's just instinctual, honestly. I mean, I don't really pretend to know exactly what I'm doing and feel like I just do what feels right in the moment. I mean, I know that's incredibly vague, but each case is different. So, you know, sometimes I'll look at it can come in from a lot of different directions. So sometimes, like, let's say there's a huge amount of lettering in the background, like a big sound effect. Sometimes I just don't want to draw the background, or it actually accentuates the action that I'm trying to convey. So it can be a lot of different reasons is the answer. But I was just trying to have fun at the time. You know, it's sort of, I started doing some of this stuff on some of my previous jobs, like on Time Before Time, for example, as you mentioned. I played around with some of that sound effect stuff and trying to integrate it into the art and just having fun with it. And this was sort of just me I've had total control to do it in this. So, and also I was lettering it, so I wasn't getting in the way of letters, and it's much more seamless if it's all being done by one person. So, yeah.
You talked a little bit about your influences earlier. When I was looking through the book, I was trying to characterize your art in my head. It's definitely leaning towards the more cartoony. Some of the influences that I pulled out, I don't know if they're accurate.
But no, go for it. This is always fun.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a guessing game. I saw a little bit of Mike Mignola in there sometimes, maybe a little bit of Jamie Hewlett as well. You're giving a nod and a thumbs up, yeah. So I'm feeling pretty good so far.
I'm sorry, yeah, this is a podcast. For those not listening, I'm just giving thumbs up.
No, that's fine. And, yeah. Who else? Who else then? Who do you pull on for your
I mean, Mick McMahon is a real big one. A lot of US people may not be as familiar with him, but he's certainly had a huge career in 2000 AD and very well known over here. I've liberally borrowed from his style. Robert Valley, the animator Robert Valley, he's amazing. Peter Chung, who is his mentor, both of those guys, I absolutely love their work. You could just go on and on. Otomo, Katsuhiro Otomo, I love. You can't necessarily see it that much in my work, but that is one of my formative influences. Absolutely love his stuff. Matsumoto Taiyo, the guy who did Ping Pong. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but yeah, there's just so many, but those are like the primary ones off the top of my head.
And from a content perspective, you mentioned 2000 AD, which definitely jumped out because, you know, it's hard not to see a cop in a near future, you know, situation, not think necessarily about Judge Dredd. This is not Judge Dredd. It's a very different thing. But what were you trying to pull on there? Like, what were you... Again, I don't know how much you want to say because this, as we're taping, this isn't coming out for like another 2 months. But
yeah,
what were you looking at in terms of your satire, in terms of what you were saying for the book?
I've had this question a few times because I've been doing some email interviews. And honestly, it's not something I wasn't looking at anything else particularly to all of this. You know, obviously, I've got a lot of influence swirling around in my brain. We all do because we're inundated by this stuff culturally. And a lot of science fiction has come before. I'm sure subconsciously it was things like, I mean, I'm sure there's some Dredd in there for sure. I grew up with 2000 AD in the house, so it was around, along with a heap of other stuff. What can I say about that? I mean, V for Vendetta was big. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was going to throw out one that it reminded me of even a little more than like 2000 AD stuff was The Fifth Element without any of the alien elements.
Yeah, I love Fifth Element. Yeah.
Yeah. It just sort of has sort of like the arch ridiculous. There's characters that kind of look like Chris Tucker's character a little bit. Like there's a sense of that.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm a big fan of Luc Besson's early work, so I'm not surprised that comes out a little bit. I don't know. So much of it is just, like I said, it's unconscious. So it's not something that I didn't have any books open looking at stuff when I was drawing the thing. So, I don't know how to answer that one really.
What about the real world influence then? I mean, this is, I don't know again, how much you want to talk about this, but one of the big things that I took away at the end, without spoiling anything about the end of the first issue, is there seems to be a little bit of like, obviously the status quo is fascist and broken and not working, but there's also a sense that the resistance is kind of broken and not working as well. Mm-hmm. You're nodding here, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to put my feelings too much on it necessarily, because it's, I mean, When I listen to interviews and like someone is literally telling you what they think about it, it kind of removes the audience's ability to do that, because then it's colored by what the creator thinks, right? Mm-hmm. So having said that, I was very much looking around at what's happening now, basically. I mean, and when I started writing this in 2021, 2022, so it was kind of what was happening then as well. There is some allusions to pandemic stuff. Later not in the first issue, but later on. And just political stuff in general. I mean, you've only got to look around at today's world and see that there's at least some of, I think it would be fair to say there's at least some of that going on right now. It's just extrapolated and heightened in my book. I was just taking things to ridiculous places. I think the book, the way at least it's sort of gone out there in press releases at the moment, I feel kind of doesn't necessarily represent how silly the book is. Like, it's really silly.
It's very silly.
And so, like, I hope that at least comes across when someone is reading it. So, but my tongue is so far through my cheek, it's ridiculous. So, yeah. I was just trying to have some fun with it. And if someone is able to see it in that way, that's great.
Well, I, having read it, and again, without mentioning too much, I'll stop saying that in a second. I do think, you know,
it's cool. It's so hard to do not mention spoilers. So,
yes. But I do think that really comes through from my reading, at least. Like, very much you're setting up bad things started America. They are also coming and happening in England at the same time. Most of the action is London, but there's this whole connection between New York and London. And it's very clear, I think, from my reading, what you're talking about there. But the stuff that I'm probably going to remember most for the first issue is you have a character that's sort of an Uber cop, the way that you draw him, he's got one leg constantly up on a chair. It's very funny. It's a funny visual. He's going nuts with the drinking and the alcohol. There's like little asides that feel very cartoony to me as well. So yes, I think the humor comes through, the archness comes through, and not to monologue myself, but I've always felt very strongly, I come from a comedy background first, that we would always approach political ideas being like, we have a firm idea, but let's make sure it's funny first, because if you have an idea, people are more willing to accept whatever political idea you're throwing out there if you couch it in humor. If they're laughing, that's an agreement. They're more willing, they're more open. Versus drama, you could get through to somebody, but if you're being very dramatic, if they don't agree with you, they're going to be like, well, no, I'm out of here. Thank you.
Yeah. No, totally get it. I mean, part of the reason for me doing this book, which sort of alludes to your first question as well, or is at least connected to it, is I'd never really managed to sort of, you know, humor is such an important part of my life. I love to laugh. I don't know anyone that doesn't, but it's very, very important to me. And in all of the work that I've done in comics so far, I just haven't been able to express that in the way that I had it in my head before, basically. And that's no disrespect to anyone that I've worked with. It's just like that. It wasn't necessarily appropriate in a lot of the things that I've worked on. So this was very much a vehicle to just have some crazy fun with, and maybe some of it will land. Maybe I like it. So, I mean, that's the main, I was entertaining myself. Let's put it that way. Yeah, that was a big part of doing the book.
You touched on this earlier, but now that you have done this first work, and I guess I don't know how deep, have you finished it at this point, or are you still?
Destination Kill's done. Okay. I mean, I finished this almost 2 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's been just
then what's the feeling time. Like that it's finally actually coming out in a month or two?
I mean, it's very surreal, honestly. It's really surreal. The thought that people will actually have this in their hands is very odd. It's kind of like it's a birthing thing, right? I mean, when it's all you, I mean, I've never had this experience before, so it's really quite, it's new. And in some ways it kind of makes you quite vulnerable. But I'm happy that that's happening. I wanted this, you know, it's just part of it. But yeah, I guess I will know more about how it feels when it's actually out. At the moment, it sort of feels like it's half out. You know, there's a lot of people behind the scenes have read it. Artists, I mean, but that's kind of like they're viewing it from a certain lens. So I wonder when it goes out to a more general audience, how it would be seen. You know, because a lot of people have responded purely to the art, for example, and said less about what they think about the story, and vice versa as well. But artists are weird. So that's like, it's not necessarily like I mean, that's only a very particular reaction, you know, that they'll be looking at. Like I said, they're seeing it through the lens of art. So
yeah,
I'm curious to see.
And you indicated that you're already working on something else that you're going to be doing yourself. Anything you could say about that, or too far?
Not particularly. It's something I haven't even pitched yet. So I've done the first issue of it. It is another mini series. But basically I'm not sure whether I'll be able to do it at the moment. I might need to put it on the shelf for a bit. Mm-hmm. It's just a financial thing. Basically I need to see whether I can basically finance the project. So,
yeah. Well, hopefully we'll not see. Another 8 years before that one.
I really hope not. I really hope not, but I've got to make a living in between. So we will see. That will probably drive the decision for whatever comes next. But I am really excited about it. I think it's a really fun idea, and that's an incredibly vague answer, but it does involve animals. I'll say that.
I love animals.
Animals, and they might be defending their home from outrageous attackers. And that's about all I can say without giving too much away.
Fair enough. Joe, thank you so much for hopping on. Thanks for taking the time to talk. If people want to check out your stuff, where should they go, socially or otherwise?
I'm on Instagram, and I mean, Twitter's pretty much dead, but I am on there occasionally, just for reposting stuff. Yeah, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky I'm on as well. And it's all at Joe Palmer Art, so pretty easy to find.
Pretty easy. Congratulations, Joe. And a reminder for everybody, Destination Kill number one comes out from Oni Press on May 13th, but the FOC is April 20th. So get your orders into comic book shops now. Joe, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much, Alex. I really appreciate it.
Special guest speak. So grab your inhaler.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.